So I'm
very pleased to be joined by the president and CEO of the Toronto Blue Jays on my show.
Yes.
Yes.
Mark Shapiro. Mark,
very much your show.
Well, for a while anyhow. Thanks
so
much.
No one can see, but you're elevated on a platform above Mike.
And that's right.
Well, I don't know about that. But
Jeff seats 4 feet higher than
Dan Duquette did make the point that he's seen all the Sportsnet people wearing ties. And his comment was, I guess you go to the playoffs 2 years in a row and you start wearing ties.
We've got one.
Dan's not used to seeing me. Not used to seeing me wearing ties.
That's because we all have to do our TV hits.
Exactly.
We've got to look sharp.
We're led to believe, we saw Jose Bautista's agent yesterday as we were waiting in the hallway to go into the daily briefing with Ross Atkins.
And his entourage.
And
four of them.
It's quite an entourage indeed. You guys talking to Bautista about bringing him back?
Yeah, I mean, I think that fits within the realm of the nature of this time of year, which is we're talking to Bautista, we're talking to five other free agents that fit, you know, potential role in the team. We've talked about probably two other trade fits that fit that role. So, I mean, it's an easy yes to that.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't characterize that as – I never handicap it. I wouldn't characterize that as being, you know, a favorite option or, you know, the number one, two, three, four, or five option. It's just clearly he's a guy that we know and a guy that is a superstar player and appreciated by our fan base.
So just to be clear, you're interested in Jose Bautista – even though Orioles fans don't like him.
Is that a factor?
There are
a number of variables that factor into our decision-making. That is not one.
All right, just making sure.
Yeah.
On that one.
I'd like to get players that the entire AL East dislikes vehemently. That would be a plus.
I think Boston just got one of those yesterday.
Yeah.
But as far as, you know, the free agents and the trade negotiations and things, looking at the overall philosophical stuff, it seems to me like you guys have your price point, and as long as you have other options waiting around, that's it. You're not going to – maybe it's unfair to say you're not going to budge at all.
Pat Gillick.
On the price point. Yeah, Pat Gillick just stopped by the show. Did he leave his phone here? That would be awesome if Pat Gillick left his phone here. But, no, it doesn't look like it. It seems
Man,
like
I'd
you
pay for that contact list.
Yeah. And that's it's a hell of a
it's
Rolodex.
It's a good one. It's built up over a lot of years.
You have your price point.
Paul Beeson really had the Rolodex, by the way.
That's does right. He really?
Like,
yeah.
No, legit. Like,
yeah,
legit.
Yeah,
like, I mean,
wow.
I told him it's a museum piece.
That's going to the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame when he's done. Is that a fair assessment that you know what you're willing to spend on a guy, and as long as you still have your plan B's floating around and there are other options, that you can stick to that?
Well, I mean, listen, I think that a successful negotiation, one, and a well-executed strategy, two, depends upon internally framing values, particularly when you're in a setting like this, which means, you know, in plain English, means that when you go into an off-season plan, you have the ability to both prioritize players, prioritize alternatives. You're doing a ton of different scenarios, right? And attached to those alternatives is a value that you would assign to each player, either if you're trading the players you give up, if you're signing a free agent, you know, whether a draft pick's involved or not involved, the dollars that are involved. You're factoring all those things in. You're weighing those as you look at alternatives. And in the case of, you know, some of the names that were floated yesterday, including the one you just asked me about, some of the time it's about one player versus two or three players, and how that might impact, you know, the course of 162 games and the different ways and philosophies of building a team. There's no one course to go. If you only set out for one course, you're probably in big trouble. You've got to stay fluid and you've got to stay flexible. I think the things that we did proactively this offseason put us in position where we can be more patient now, particularly in a market that has a lot of alternatives where we're looking. We're in that position right now to kind of continue to recognize we have a lot of work left to do, but there are a lot of good alternatives out there to pursue at this point.
Would you go 5 years in a player? Do you have a...
I don't have anything set in stone.
Okay.
No, I mean, I think there's absolutely players I'd go 5 years for, you know. But I think age is a increasingly in our game a very real factor. And again, what I would say is this, that no one decision is made in isolation, right? So what I mean by that is how many other players do you have aging on your roster that you have to, you know, coincide and deal with? How many, you know, all those things I think weigh into it. you know, where is a player? What is that player's individual history? You know, how every player ages differently. But when you look at the galaxy of players, there are some very real underlying factors, and you know, that you can't deny as far as when players start to age.
Rick Hahn yesterday, when at the news conference, when the Chris Sale trade was announced, talked about how, as an organization, they sat down and they did this last year, and they came to the conclusion. He said, you know, the path we were on wasn't going to take us where we needed to go. He said we came to the decision that now was the time to pivot. When you were in Cleveland, you made that bold trade, getting Grady and Brandon Phillips and Cliff Lee from the Montreal from the Montreal Expos. You've kind of been there before. What's that like for a general manager?
Tough. Really tough.
To have to make that call. And as a follow-up, should Jays fans be concerned that with
no.
an older roster, you may get to that point soon?
Well, I mean, I would say this to you. Every situation is different. I did it multiple times in Cleveland. And,
right,
you know,
yes.
they're going to have to do it at some point in 3 to 5 years. Right now, they're positioned for probably one of the most productive 3 to 5 year runs in the game. On the other side of that, and Chris knows this well, is the reality they're going to start picking later in the draft. Mm-hmm. They're not going to be able to do the kind of things we can do in free agency. And so they ultimately are going to be in a position where they have to make some very difficult and painful trades in order to re-energize their roster and turn over their roster. Those trades are made with the understanding that if you're not picking close to the draft, the next best way to infuse young talent into your system to turn over a team and to build up a next championship run is to trade. There's only limited access to talent. You know,
right.
It's free agency where you're signing almost always declining players. You're paying for past performance, not future performance, and you're signing declining players. That's the nature of free agency because of the age of the players when they reach it. There's trades which are, you know, better than the draft as far as probability, but still you're getting prospects. Just the mere nature of the word means you're not a sure thing. And there's the draft, which takes, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 years to kind of see the fruits of your labor there. So you're not going to get an immediate return on that. So you have to execute that year after year after year with an intense focus on that. And the international market as well, obviously. So I think, you know, a well-constructed philosophy is one where you're obsessing about infusing talent constantly, regardless of where you are. You're conscious of constructing a roster that's balanced, you know, that doesn't, you know, age all at one time, that has, you're gradually giving younger players an opportunity so you don't go off a cliff at any one point in time. But I do think that different markets afford the ability to go through things at to different magnitudes and different extents. The Yankees pushed their version of the reset button last year, and we're still a good team. Not a great team, but a good team. It wasn't the violent overhaul. You know, what fueled the Cleveland success this year was trading Cy Young winners in back-to-back years and drafting in the top, you know, 5 to 7 for 3 years in a row. That's a lot of pain that goes into that.
Yeah.
The Cubs, by the way, a large market team, were built the same way. Some very tough trades and picking in the very top to get their third baseman, who's one of the best players in the game, you know, their second baseman, who's one of the best young players in the game. So they went through a lot of pain also. I would like to think that we can avoid that. But you'll evaluate that, Jeff, at every juncture, every July, every offseason, every chance you have to make trades. You have, right now, the answer is absolutely no. That's not even in the realm of considerations for us.
Since we only have you for a couple more minutes, you got to do the TV stuff. I want to ask you about the World Baseball Classic.
Yeah.
There may be as many as a dozen Blue Jays who get asked for to play. And you know, we know Russell Martin's going to play the middle infield for Canada, and Ross Atkins has talked about that already. But with guys like an Aaron Sanchez, who Mexico wants, who's coming off the innings bump, Marco Estrada with the back problems, Kevin Pillar with the thumb surgery, who Israel wants, and the fact that he'd have to go to South Korea to play in that pool. Are you going to be inclined to maybe say no on any requests?
Well, I think the first thing you do is go to the player. I mean, every one of those guys you just mentioned, I'm guessing if you went to them, they would have some real concerns. And every single player is going to do a risk-benefit. You know, what's the risk and what's the benefit of participating? For some guys, it's a no-brainer. You know, if Josh Donaldson gets asked and wants to do it, it's a no-brainer, right? In every circumstance, I think we're trying in this game, you know, build our, and I have to take off my Blue Jay hat and put on my MLB hat because I'm one of 30 people in that room that, you know, is responsible for supporting, you know, the growth of the game and the future of the game. But the competitive nature of me has some real concerns in some cases. In other cases, you know, I can park my concerns and know it's for the good of the game. But there are some situations where the upside and benefit is so small for the level of risk involved that it just makes no sense at all. But again, I think in those circumstances, Mike, the players would tell you that before. We wouldn't even have to have a conversation.
Before we let you run, the TV people are just setting up. There's a lot of talk that you guys are talking to Dexter Fowler. I'm not going to ask you specifically about players because I think I know you well enough to know that you're not going to answer specifically, which is fine. But what, as we sit here today, and you look at your roster, what do you need to be able to feel comfortable about this team's ability to win a division?
Well, I mean, I think we need, obviously, the same things we went into the offseason saying. We need more balance. We need a little more speed and athleticism. You know, we need a little more depth. You know, I do think depth is a unique and overlooked area of our roster. It gets back to the exact same things we talked about last offseason, which is when you don't have a wealth of talent at AAA, you need to be conscious of where the alternatives are if you have injuries and ensure that no one injury is going to just undermine a season. And so as we look at, you know, the building our roster, versatility and depth has been, you know, not just talent, but we want to add championship talent, but versatility and depth has been part of the equation. I think the crux of the decision-making for us as a baseball operations group is coming down to in our remaining moves. Do we, you know, use one bolt on one player that is a good, very good player, if not, you know, an elite player in the game, but very good player in the game, and that player can have a variety of names, two or three different names, be it a trade or a free agent, or do we offset that with, you know, saying, hey, we're going to get, a better backup catcher to ensure Russell Martin stays healthy all year. We're going to get better pieces in the bullpen than hoping we can kind of get lucky like we did last year and continue to adjust along the way. We are going to get, you know, a good outfielder, but maybe not, you know, an everyday outfielder, but complement that with guys that can platoon and play in various situations. And, you know, we can't do both those things because we don't have that level of resources left, but we have to determine whether we, you know, which one of those two directions we go. And so as we look at alternatives, and we're fluid, you know, on both those things, it's a matter of, you know, weighing those and determining what the best course is to build a winner. And that's really ultimately what it's all about.
Jed Hoyer made a point in an article I read about the Cubs, talking about how the Cubs have kind of taken a different approach where, you know, it used to be young pitching was the currency of the realm. The Cubs' approach is kind of, you know, we're going to load up in young position players and we'll spend our free agent money on pitchers who are 27, 28 after somebody else has drafted them, developed them, had them do their Tommy John thing, rehab them. Are we maybe seeing a swing towards young position players now as opposed to young pitchers, or is that too simplistic?
I think this, you know, once you determine and see where the swings went, it's already gone and it's too late to adjust to that, you know. So if the Cubs did that, it's too late to follow them. We've got to kind of set our own course. What I would say is if you talk to Theo, who's Jed's boss, who I've talked to frequently, he would say one thing to you, young. Mm-hmm. That's what he would say to you. Go young.
Yeah.
You know, don't get old. And then, yeah, that's what you, when Theo, you go up to Theo and go, give me some good advice, Theo. Young, good, old, bad. You know, so that's what he said to me last year. So I think, you know, again, that's the smartest guy in baseball. He's probably one of the greatest executives in the history of the game at this point. And I think there's some wisdom to that. You know, it's not that established players, you know, and this time of year we have an obsession with names, an obsession with established players. But it's important to keep your eye on what are you doing to get young talent? What are you doing to maintain balance in your roster? You know, there are some things we can't deny that are already in place that we have to deal with. But, you know, I think we're also conscious wherever possible, just like Ross did a phenomenal job last year when he got Francisco Liriano of, okay, we're going to get two young players back in addition to that. So every opportunity we can, we're also thinking about how do we balance, how do we continue to you know, balance our roster out and ensure that, you know, there's the tipping point is not one that's, you know, a cliff and one that we can continue to kind of build from and get better.
I like the young, good, old, bad stuff. But some old is good too, right? Like
balance.
Zobrist, Lackey, Lester, as long as you have the balance. Yeah,
yeah, you need to have, you know, I remember interviewing Travis Fryman for Manager a few years ago, and he said a great thing to me. He said, "Hey, Mark," he said, "young players, you know, they're going to be happy to be there. They're happy to be in the big leagues, you know. The guys in the middle are going to be happy to be there, but they're going to want to make their money." And he goes, "The veteran players just want to win." So, yeah, you need to have that balance of guys that are there for different reasons. And you want to have, you know, those players that are driven to win and win championships. And I think the veteran guys provide some wisdom. The right veteran guys like Kendrys Morales, right? Mm-hmm. They're generous and they're – I mean, I saw this with Jason Giambi and the impact he had on the Indians in 2013. This guy, you know, had – he hit the most – the weightiest 200 I've ever seen in my life because his hits were incredibly impactful hits. But the amazing thing about him, he was so generous with his past experiences, good and bad, and so willing to help a Jason Kipnis, you know, develop, so willing to help, you know, so many guys in that team get better. So you need those guys that are absolutely willing to pass on the, you know, their experiences and help teams get better. But you need to be careful about how many of those guys you have.
I want to ask you about one young guy that we haven't talked about hardly at all this whole time that we've been here in whatever this National Harbor place is, and that's Lourdes Gurriel.
Yeah.
Because I think he's sort of the mystery man. As you guys build this team, we hear you're going to start him in the infield in the minor leagues, but you have openings in the outfield and he could play there. What do you see from him? And, I mean, obviously he's going to chart his own course, but how do you see that progression happening?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure for this major league team there's an importance for time frame for him. That was more of an effort of that infusing talent and that unique opportunity to get a player in where we didn't have to give up a draft pick. We didn't have to give up another player. There are very few opportunities in the game, and I think you pay a surplus and maybe take a little more risk when you have a chance to infuse someone of his pedigree and athleticism and character. You know, so we're a little bit unknown on him. You know, like, where's he going to play? I'm not sure. You know, he's extremely athletic. He's got unbelievable pedigree. He is a high character guy and has some unique experiences. So we're a better system for having him. I can't tell you what that's going to mean for the major league team. What I hope is in 2 to 3 years, that means something for our major league team.
Is he in big league camp this year?
He'll be in big league camp because he's on the roster.
Right.
Yeah, it's a major league contract.